Thank you for inviting me here. Just a tiny bit of housekeeping. A couple of you walked in late. If you didn't, raise your hand if you didn't get five of these. Right. So I'm going to just, I have more, yeah. So you guys only take one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everyone needs five, so I got some more right there. Those don't make it around. So we're going to use those for a little activity in a bit. But thank you so much for being here. My goal this morning is to, with all of you, get a discussion going about coaching and what is quality coaching and what does it look like. And then, as Scott was saying, how can we shape behavior and shape the culture of our different clubs and our organizations and our individual athletes? And then also, because we're working with kids, how can we engage their parents in that culture as well? So what I would say is this, well, I want to start with this story. There was an American strength and conditioning coach, his name was Rhett Larson. And about 7 years ago, he got hired by the Chinese Olympic Committee to go do, you know, sport performance with all their athletes. And so Rhett goes over to China and he looks at what they're doing from a strength and conditioning standpoint. And he said, oh my God, we stopped doing what they're doing here 30 years ago in the US. And he was working with like table tennis athletes and they were having these horrendous overuse injuries. And he said, I really should just throw it all out, except I can't. Because I'm the Westerner. And if I come in and I throw everything out, which should be done, the first time an athlete loses, the first time someone doesn't perform, who are they gonna blame? They're gonna blame me, and I'm gonna be fired, I'm gonna be back out the door 2 months from now. Even though I know that I'm right, I can't do that. So what he said is, give me 10%. What's the 10%? What's the 15% that I can start with in the training of these athletes? Because I'm confident that if I get that 10%, it's gonna make a difference. They're gonna get injured less, they're gonna perform better, and then they'll give me more. And sure enough, that's what happened, right? So he got his 10%. Athletes started performing better, and they came back and said, oh, this is really good, what else do you have? And 10 became 20, and 20 became 40. And over the course of years, he got to institute so much stuff. But he said, you know, at that first year, if I filmed the training, the strength and conditioning training that I was doing with Olympic level athletes in China, and I came back to North America, and I presented this at the strength and conditioning conference, because I would have been laughed out of the room. But I had to realize that I couldn't change everything at once. So over the course of the years, he had a lot of success with his athletes, and they kept giving him more and more teams. And then going into the Rio Olympics a couple years ago, they gave him the one team sport that had a chance to win a medal, which was women's volleyball. And their women's volleyball team went in, ranked 8th in the world, and ended up winning gold. So he's like, now I can do whatever I want. Right? Now whatever I say is gold. But before that, I had to just start bit by bit. So when we speak and when we talk and when we have a discussion over the next 60 to 90 minutes here, there's nothing about anything I'm saying that's saying throw out everything you've done and start from scratch. But what I'm asking is find your 10%. And this weekend when you talk, when Kip talks and Dujon talks and all these other people, find your 10%. Find your 15% that's something that I can do that can help my athletes get better. Right? So I can guarantee you that everything that we're all talking about, it's not we didn't just wake up this morning and just make it up. It's based in science, it's based on research, it's based on a lot of best principles and good stuff. And if you find your 10%, I think you'll come back looking for 20. Because I know I've been coaching for many years. When I finished playing, I had a couple injuries, and you know, I coached college and I coached youth. But I know that my coaching has, the last couple of years, has changed dramatically because of the work that I get to do, because I get to travel to places like this and meet all of you and learn from all of you. And we have a podcast now called Way of Champions. I get to interview these incredible sports scientists and coaches and learn from them. And I've totally changed the way that I've coached because of that. And I think here's one of the biggest takeaways that I'd like you to have. Those of us who coach, we want coaching to be considered a profession, right? because it's an incredibly important thing. We work with kids, it's public, it's emotional, we keep score, we keep track of results. And the things that we say and do, they can stick with a kid the rest of their life. So it needs to be considered a profession because we have to pour into ourselves, but we have to act like professionals. And that means that we're always looking to get a little bit better. Right? Your neurosurgeon, if he or she did surgery the way that she did 10 years ago or 5 years ago or even 2 years ago, they'd be sued for malpractice, at least in the United States. Right? They're constantly evolving. What's next? What's new? And I think this is what we have to be doing as coaches as well. Because, you know, I like this. So I was reading this education book, this guy Tom Rademacher. He said this. He said, this is the myth of teaching, and I just put in the word coaching. Right? It's easy. Just set high expectations and your athletes will meet them. That's all. That's all it is, right? And he said, but then here's the reality. Set high expectations, communicate them effectively while simultaneously communicating concern, love, and respect, and reinforce those things while not enforcing your high expectations the way that will damage your relationships or try to be too much of a button. Also, check yourself constantly and make sure your expectations are focused on your athletes, and then some of your athletes will meet them, but not all, and not on all things. That's coaching, right? That's coaching. That's getting out there in front of those kids. So, three chunks today, like I said. Really looking at for a while, what is quality coaching? Right? Coaching is not just an art, there is a science behind it, and we have to constantly be blending the two. Right? Understanding and building the culture of our teams, even in individual sports like ski, right? And then engaging parents in the process. Now, even though I am a soccer guy, I do a lot of work in the ski world. I just got back from working with one of the best ski clubs in the US called Ski Club Vail, which I've been there a couple of years. I've worked with Steamboat, Winter Park, a couple of others, Washington. I live in Bend, Oregon. I was never a ski racer. I grew up on Long Island, New York. There's no ski racing there. But I'm an avid, still a 40-day a year, you know, someone who's on the snow, who has kids who are on the snow all the time. So I don't know any of the X's and O's of your sport, nor would I ever claim to. But I think what we can share is a lot of the stuff that whether you're a soccer coach, or a volleyball coach, or a hockey coach, or you're a ski coach, and we put aside what's sports specific and we meet in the middle, that's coaching. That's coaching. So I want to start with those little yellow sticky notes that you all got. And you all got five of those. And what I'm asking you to do is this. List the five qualities, one per sticky note, of the best coach you ever had. All right, does anyone need a pen? Okay, I think do we have a couple extra pens?
We have a couple ones here. We have some here, and maybe some at the back on the registration
number. Do you need one here?
Sure.
Anyone else need a pen? Ready? Anyone else? You ready? You guys are lucky. I got one more. There you go. I think one over there. So my wife is an OBGYN, and so I used to grab her old like Rugrat pens and bring them to these things. I'm like, don't steal my pens. You go home with like these type of pens and say, oh, I was at a coaching conference, someone's going to believe you. All right, so the five qualities of the best coach that you ever had. And there is no correct answer here. They could be like they knew a lot about the sport, or they were inspiring, or they were caring, or they were fair, or demanding, whatever that is. Right? But there's no wrong answer. No one can tell you what that is. And again, one per sticky note. One per sticky note. He bought me beer is not a great answer, but it is an answer. See a couple people scribbling. Some of you done? All right, so here's what I'm going to ask you to do, and this is kind of a tough room for this because there's not a lot of flat surfaces. But we're going to get up, and we're going to put our sticky notes up on the wall. And here's what I'm going to ask you to do. If the sticky note has to do with your coach's knowledge of the sport, and again, that obviously didn't have to be a ski coach, but their knowledge of the sport, we're going to just make our way in here and stick it up on this part of the wall. These lights are not too hot. Check out, you can put them on the ski note, right? And then if your sticky note has to do with connection, that coach's ability to connect, emotional intelligence, these are the things like caring and fairness and demanding and all that, we're going to stick it up over here, and then you can meet the guy who's, in my world, I think is very important, the person sponsoring the cocktail party. So say hi to him, right? So this is connection, and this is knowledge. So go ahead, when you're ready, go stick your sticky notes up on the walls there. Knowledge by the coffee, connection by the cocktail party.
I was hoping you were going to get out of the car.
This side is like a person's condition. This side is like knowledge of the sport by the coffee and connection by the cocktail party.
What did all the
professional clubs all the way to amateur, again, in Asia, in Europe, in the U.S., in Canada, and it always looks the same. It's never been more on that side. And I think one of the biggest issues that we have in coaching education is that when we go and do coaching education, what wall do we spend almost all our time on? We go over there. For what every coach everywhere says, this is only part of it. This is only part of it. I like to think of this analogy of being a leader, being a mentor, being a coach as an iceberg, right? That the part that we see above the water, what we do, that's only a small part of it, but who we are, our character, that's our true strength. That's the mass. That's really what makes the difference. That our athletes don't really care how much we know until they know how much we care. And when we care, when we connect, then the good stuff happens. Then they want to know. Then they want to learn from us. But they have to know that we're in it for them. What are some of the words, and we can kind of shout out a couple, what are some of the words you put on this wall?
Funny.
Funny. Great one, right? I get an email, we were talking with Kip last night, right? I get one email a month from a parent that says, hey, should my kid join the competitive place or the one that's fun? Yeah. What else?
Inspiring.
Truthful. Engaging. What else?
What's there?
Loving.
Loving.
Respectful.
Patient.
Patient. Love that one.
Discipline.
Discipline. And this idea of being disciplined, inspiring, demanding, if anyone had something like demanding, right? These are things that we look for in a coach, right? We don't remember the coach who let us slide by. So I get lots of coaches who say, you know, I'm being demanding. No, you're being demeaning. Those are two very different things, right? Athletes like coaches who are demanding, who say, good, now do this. But to be demeaning, right, to attack their person, that's not a quality, right? So all these things that you talk about, the best coach you ever had, they're in you because you had that coach. And what you have to ask yourself is, are those coming out in my coaching. Because sometimes the pressure to win or the pressure put on by parents, well, we become a very different coach than the one who really inspired us and made us believe in ourselves. And you can have different, you know, this might even be, you know, the qualities of two coaches. You know, I talked to an Olympic swimmer from Great Britain, and he just said, you know, I had two coaches. One was my first coach who just made me fall in love with swimming, and the other was one who taught me a heck of a lot about swimming and the technical part. But they were both equally important in my life. Right? So this is coaching right here. This wall, I believe, makes you a trainer. And this wall, when you add that in, makes you a coach. Makes you a coach. That person there, when they have no one to turn to. Right? I look around the room, some of you have been coaching a while. Who's been invited to the wedding of one of your former athletes? Right? Was that because you taught them how to edge a ski? No, right? It's because of that, because you were there for them. As a coach, I've coached long enough now where I've been to weddings. Also, probably the hardest thing that ever done was a friend of mine. I coach all three of his kids. He took his own life because of depression. And his wife called me up and said, can you go to the high school, right, and bring lunch to my 15-year-old son, right, who won't talk to anyone except you? That's being a coach. That's connection, right? Now, this isn't just me thinking about this or else putting it on the wall. This is backed by research. So, this big initiative in 12 and under sports in the United States called Project Play by the Aspen Institute. And a woman named Amanda Bissick from George Washington University, she did this thing called Fun Integration Theory. And I know some of you listen to the podcast that we do called Way of Champions, and we just had her on as a guest a couple weeks ago, all about what makes sports enjoyable for kids. And this is what the top five things that kids say that they want from a coach: respect and encouragement, positive role model, clear communication, consistency, know what you're talking about, be a good listener. And I don't think these things change. Right? When I talk to former professional athletes, no one's like, oh yeah, I love that guy who disrespected me or discouraged me, right? Or who didn't care what I had to say. Like I said, I live in Bend, Oregon, and one of the Olympic athletes who lives there is a guy named Ashton Eaton. And he won the decathlon in the last two Olympics, London and Rio. And he just retired, and I was talking to Ashton, and he said, he was very famous working with his coach. At the end of every month, Ashton was so into getting better. He used to compile like a 20 to 30 page dossier of how he thought he did this month and what he needed to do. And he'd sit down with his coach and review it, and they'd sit down and he'd go through it and say, yes, we can do this, or no, we can't do this. That was a coach who listened to one of his athletes. So this is what the research said. Now, what we also have in the US, and I was debating back and forth, okay, I'm in Canada, should I talk about the US Olympic Committee's new quality coaching initiative? Then I thought it was okay to do so because it was written by a Canadian. Dr. Wade Gilbert, right? He's at Fresno State now, but he just wrote this great book called Coaching Better Every Season. And then he worked with Chris Snyder, the director of coach education for the USOC, on what is quality coaching? So they'd go to the Olympic coaches and say, are you a great coach? And they'd say, yeah, we won 6 medals in Rio. You say, okay, great. So the next World Championships, your athletes only win 2 medals, then we can fire you. No, well, no. So then did we win isn't really just the only thing about, are you a great coach? So they came up with this framework that was just released in like the end of September. And there's three parts, and I think it's really, really important, because again, it draws on science and psychology and especially child development and research. And this is now what they're saying, that we want to hold and evaluate all our coaches on, from, you know, Mike Krzyzewski in basketball and the Olympic luge coach and hockey coach. But hopefully this trickles down through all our NGOs down to the grassroots level.
right? And so that quality coaching has three components now, right? Number one, essential coaching knowledge. And there's three parts to that. Part one, knowledge of the sport, obviously very important. Part two, knowledge of interpersonal relationships, that wall. And part three, knowledge of yourself. What are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? What are you good at? Do you get emotional in emotional times and say things that you don't like? Do you surround yourself with people who are good at maybe the things that you're not good at so that your athletes get a whole perspective? But that's coaching knowledge. Number two, athlete-centered outcomes. So for years we've looked at coaching, I think, again, as being a trainer. Just check the boxes on competencies. We're teaching competencies. But now what the USOC is saying is that quality coaching, right, has four components to it. Yes, you're teaching competence. You're teaching the X's and O's, the technical and tactical aspects of your sport. But you are also responsible as a coach for developing confidence and self-belief and self-worth of your athletes, resilience, mental toughness. This is part of your responsibility. Connection, right, the interpersonal skills. Can you build relationships among your athletes, whether you're in a team sport or whether you are in an individual sport? And I'm gonna talk about that a lot more in depth later. And then character. We are responsible as coaches for developing character, right? In Rio, the U.S. had an issue with a swimmer that made world news, right? Where his ability took him to a place that his character could not sustain, Ryan Lochte, right? And we hear this in professional sports and Olympic level sports all the time, right? We need to be developing character, especially when kids are young, and we can shape that much sooner, rather than picking them up later on when you're coaching a national team and saying, this person doesn't have the character or the training habits or the behaviors to really be an international level athlete. Who passed them on? Who passed them on? Right? It's not our responsibility how an athlete behaves when we get them. That's someone else's doing. But I think we have to take responsibility for how they behave when they leave our program, right? When they're with us. That is our responsibility. We can't just kick the can down the road because they ski fast, or they play soccer well, or they play hockey well, or whatever. So these are the four components. And then that third part of that was the contextual fit. Where are you coaching? What are the ages and abilities and the levels of your athletes? Because context matters, right? This picture is one of my favorites, right? First of all, right, and so obviously this is in the picture, so I forgot to put the slide, right? So are they on a participation path or a performance path? Right? We are all in this room part of a sport that is a lifelong participation sport, right? I mean, ski till you're 80, maybe beyond. I forget the woman's name, there's a former U.S. Olympic skier who lives in Bend. And I remember following her up to the summit of the mountain, and she's probably in her like mid-70s now, and we're traversing around, you know, Mount Bachelor, where there's a big volcano, so we're traversing around the top, and she's like 50 yards ahead of me, and then she just turns, and she's gone. Well, where'd she just go? Like, holy cow, right? So it's a lifelong participation sport. And I think when kids first start out, right, every kid is in for participation. Right? Like, no, I've never met like a six-year-old who's like, coach, I'm here to grind today. Like, right? But then some go down this performance path where they want a little more, they want to be pushed a little harder, they want to be demanding more stuff, and I think we have to make sure we give them that within that team context. While others just want that participation, right? And maybe their ski racing background brings them into something else. My friend, a guy who does some speaking for me, who's a U.S. national team soccer player, his name's Jay DeMeritt, and Jay's married to a Canadian Olympic skier cross gold medalist named Ashley Peter, right? Who was a ski racer growing up, who always preferred skiing trees on power days than running gates, but stuck with it long enough to get good enough at skiing, broke her leg, got out of the ski racing thing, got into downhill mountain biking, learned how to use terrain to keep her speed up, and then before the Vancouver Olympics, figured out I could meld these two things in a sport called skier cross, and ended up winning the gold medal, right? And she credits her multi-sport and riding mountain bikes, but also her ski racing background enabled her to do that. So that path was not to be, you know, an international World Cup racer, but it certainly kept her on a path to be a high-performance athlete and something else. Now we have to understand the context as well, especially the ages and stages of our kids. So there's my favorite picture, right? Those are two 12-year-olds born 1 week apart.
Oh my God,
at Fulham's Academy in London, England. Right? A 12-year-old boy, for example, could have a 5-year developmental age swing, which means he might have the body of a 10-year-old and the body of a 15-year-old. Right? And so we have to understand that kids develop on their own pace on their own time, and we have to create programming and clubs that allow for that. We have this idea of relative age, right? Whatever, wherever you were born next to that arbitrary calendar cutoff date, if you're born within those first 3 months, you're far more likely to go on a high performance track than if you're born in the last 3 months. Right? Until age about 16, 17. Right, when puberty, when kids are done growing, and now we're looking at something closer to the final athlete. Okay. So we have to understand the context that they're in as well. I think there can be consistent things that we ask of our kids. You can have accountability for an 8-year-old, which means, you know, don't forget your gloves. Right, and then you can have accountability for an 18-year-old, which means, you know, you're doing dry land, you're doing all these other things, but we can still expect accountability of them. We just have to look at the context they're in to define it. Okay, so any questions on any of that so far? Comments? No.
Yeah. Just the A.
Oh, yay! Oh, okay. Yay. So this is quality coaching. Now let's take quality coaching one step further. I like this. There's a great book written 30 years ago called The Inner Game of Tennis by a man named Tim Galway. And he says, performance is potential minus interference. So how an athlete performs is their potential, which is their hours of practice and the coaching and the culture that they grew up in and the genetics and all that, minus interference. And the single reason that interferes with performance, especially in this sport, is between your ears, right? What's that inner voice saying over and over and over as you're getting into the starting gate? Is it saying, I'm good enough, I believe in myself? Is it clear or is it a mess? And so there's this thing called the Stroop effect. In 1935, this psychologist named John Ridley Stroop came up with this idea that when you add cognitive interference, it actually slows down the reaction time of the task. So your physical performance slows down when you add mental interference. So we're all actually going to take the Stroop test here together. There's no needles here. All right. So we're going to start with this. All right, this is the Stroop test part one. As a room, out loud, we're going to read all these words as fast as we can. So green, yellow, purple, red, blue, yellow, all four lines as fast as we can go. You're competitive people, 8.5 seconds is the record. All right, guys, ready? On your marks, get set, go.
Green, yellow, purple, red, blue, yellow, red, blue, yellow, red, blue, red, green, yellow, purple, blue, red, green, blue, 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 yellow, purple.
Pretty good. That's like 9.2.
Let's do it again.
You want to do it again?
Oh my God.
Second round.
Well, we're a little shorter. Start going.
We're pushing. Are you right to left? Bottom, top. All right. So, did any of you? Any of you have like the person next to you or whatever, like get a little bit ahead or behind?
They cheat. Oh, and I'm skipping the When she was cheating, was it distracting for you?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.